Hi, everyone, and welcome to MedEdge. I'm Marcus Grimm. Here on MedEdge, we bring you stories that exist at the intersection of healthcare and education. And increasingly, that intersection is getting a little bit more busy when we bring in the business of healthcare. Make no mistake, healthcare is, in fact, a business. At a fifth of the U.S. GDP, it's approximately equal to retail, information, and technology all combined. Now, in a previous episode, we introduced you to MD Plus, which is a volunteer organization wherein medical students go beyond textbooks and clinical work to explore innovations and technologies targeted to improving some of those complexities. Well, today's guest has a similar story, but rather than focusing on medical students, Rebecca Love's background, passion, and work, they're all in the service of nurses, those 5 million professionals who live on the front lines of the profession. Rebecca is an experienced nurse executive. She was the first nurse featured on TED.com and part of the inaugural nursing panel featured at South by Southwest in 2018. Rebecca was the first director of nurse innovation and entrepreneurship in the United States at Northeastern School of Nursing, the founding initiative in the country designed to empower nurses as innovators and entrepreneurs. There, she founded the Nurse Hackathon, a movement that has led to transformational change in the nursing profession. In early 2019, Rebecca, along with a group of leading nurses in the world, founded SANSEAL. SANSEAL is the Society of Nurse Scientists, Innovators, Entrepreneurs, and Leaders. It's a nonprofit that's quickly gained the attention of the United Nations as an affiliate member of the UN. Rebecca holds an MS in nursing from Northeastern University, a BA in international relations and Spanish from Boston University. She currently lives in Marblehead, Massachusetts, with her husband and three children. Rebecca, welcome to MedEdge.
Marcus, thank you so much for having me. Tosh, really excited to be here with both of you.
I want to start, Rebecca. I've watched a lot of your interviews, and we always ask an origin story, how people ended up in medicine as a profession. You have a great story. You were considering law school, and then you say your mom kind of nudged you in the direction of healthcare. I'm a parent. Tosh is a parent, and nudges sometimes work, and they sometimes don't. So let's talk about what that nudging looked like. Was it one of those things that you heard at one time and you said, yep, no more law school? Or tell us a little bit about that story about the nudge.
Marcus, thank you for saying that. No, it is so funny because now I am a parent. And I think when I was looking back, nursing was not anything that I ever had on my radar. And it was one of those things that my mom actually took me out to dinner. And I thought we were talking about me heading off to law school in the fall. And I was working on a presidential campaign at the time. I don't know if anybody remembers, but the topic of healthcare was a big issue. I kept going to all of these meetings and everybody was talking about healthcare. And all the people in the room were lawyers and politicians. And there weren't any nurses or doctors. And I kept thinking to myself, how do you talk to the front line if nobody in this room is an expert in that entire situation? And so literally we're sitting to dinner and I said, okay, I'm excited to head off in the fall. I might go to DC for a few months. And my mom said, you know what? Your dad and I aren't going to pay for you to go to law school. And that stopping moment, I don't know how many of you guys have had that financial moment in life. And she said, we think you should become a nurse. And so we agreed that I would apply to one nursing school to see if there was a future there. And that's when I heard from a school that there was a 2-year waiting list. You're never going to become a nurse practitioner. It's going to take too long. I thought I was going to law school, but I had submitted the application. The acceptance letter came, Marcus. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm a big believer in signs. And I thought, okay, there is a reason this was happening. I need to become a nurse. But Marcus, for a long time, once I became a nurse, I'll have to be honest, I was rather upset with my mother for a long time because I had never felt so disempowered as a professional in my career as I did when I became a bedside nurse. I had all this responsibility, but no one ever listened to us as nurses. And that was an incredibly disempowering place to be after having come from the corporate world and choosing to go back to nursing school, as a second career choice.
What can you tell us about when you received your MS in nursing from Northeastern? You go back to nursing school. When you think about your nursing education, what were some of the highlights? But also, let's talk about, you know, at what point did you realize, oh, this isn't exactly what I'd expected it to be?
Nursing school, I think I quickly realized it was not something I was expecting because I showed up there and all the questions made absolutely no sense to me. And now I had gone through and had very high degrees in my first degree program. And I got to nursing school and suddenly I was at risk of like failing out my first semester. I had no idea that nursing school was about teaching to a test called the NCLEX, an NCLEX test that basically taught you skill sets in a way that made no sense to a person who had come from an arts degree background, like a bachelor's of arts in science, right? Which was in the situation of nursing school, the way that one would make decisions on how to answer questions almost seemed counterintuitive to those who had come from a bachelor's of arts and science program, which you are supposed to think critically about the decisions you're making. But in the space of nursing school, it felt like a foreign language. And I felt like the answers they chose as the right answers were always the wrong answer. So those were the kind of things, I don't know if you hear about this often from medical students, but for me, nursing school was like I stepped into a world that made no sense. And the ways that they wanted you to study and be prepared for it, there was no instruction manual that did it. And basically, I don't know if you know this, but 30% of the nursing students in school either are failed out of nursing school or they withdraw from nursing school within the first year because the rigor is so high. But also, nobody prepares you for the way that you learn. And it's completely different than any kind of education you've ever had as a student, from early education all the way up through college. Nursing school is completely different than that. And actually, you guys know this, they've actually studied the rigor of nursing schools and found that nursing school is actually the most difficult degree in the United States from the perspective of actual rigor and intensity of any program of any undergraduate degree in the country. That's what's crazy about nursing school.
Wow. You may bring up a very interesting point about being surprised when you finish school. I do see that happening a lot these days, both with medical students and probably with nursing students, because what you expect when you go into healthcare is very different than when you actually start working there. How do we bring that awareness to that student earlier and maybe prepare them mentally? Because unless you are prepared for it, then when you start, you become, quote, burnt out, you know, and I'm not really a big fan of that word because it's like, it's kind of saying that that's like the individuals screwing up. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you see any opportunities to prepare students earlier? Because I went through the same thing too. Like, I enjoy technology, I like business, and I actually didn't want to go into medicine initially. I worked for a software company that was working with doctors and then ended up going into medicine. And then I was like, this is very different than what I saw, but I'm glad I stuck with it and I'm finding my own way in healthcare. But we see a lot of medical students saying we don't want to see patients anymore. Like, so that's like a core thing that healthcare needs to address. Love to hear any thoughts on that.
Tasha, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that it's not just us saying it, right? Most chief nursing officers today are saying that the students that are graduating from nursing school are not prepared for the front line. Now, the problem is, this isn't a new phenomenon. Even prior to the pandemic, 57% of new nursing graduates left the bedside within 2 years of practice. That's the largest exodus of any profession in any degree program in the world to leave. That all of a sudden you're graduating and nearly 60% of them are no longer there in 2 years. Something is failing them. Now, what to your point, I hate the term burnout as well, because burnout implies, as you said, that it is the failure of the individual when actually it is the failure of the environments, in my opinion, that are not making it safe and secure for nurses to continue to practice as new grads. Now, we can say there is a complete gap in nursing school education from the clinical reality of practice, which is 100% true. So there's limitations on clinical settings. And when nurses go out there and nursing students do practice in that area, they're largely restricted from actually doing the work that they're going to be doing in the future, right? For regulatory purposes and all of these issues that exist. So the question is because nursing school has become so critical to pass one test, the NCLEX, which has no clinical component on it whatsoever. The truth is that we have not prepared nurses for a clinical setting, but simply to pass a test. So the reality is there's things that we can do earlier on in nursing school education to meet them up to the standards that are necessary to practice clinically? 100%. But the truth is that the problem with the school of nursing, and I don't know if medicine is applied, is that every board of nursing in every state is different from a requirement perspective on what is required to meet the application to qualify to be a nurse in that state. So it's different. So uniformity across states is also a problem. So one state may say, hey, you need this much clinical infrastructure and training in the state of Texas versus New York. They could be light years difference. And also the technology which they allow to be used to train is highly restrictive in the nursing workforce. And you guys know this better than I do with what you're building. But there are some things that need to change. But absolutely, we are definitely not preparing students for the clinical community, and we keep just churning and burning the nursing workforce at the highest numbers of any profession in the United States, and it's simply unsustainable.
You talk about clinical preparation. I'm curious about, and so much of your work these days is centered on the role of nursing in the business of healthcare. Listen to a great interview that you did that talked about the fact of how we've kind of gotten to this point where nurses are considered, in many cases, that it's the number one line item budgetary cost. Look, if you're running any business, you're always looking at how do we, in fact, minimize costs. But talk about some of the ramifications when you think about nurses as it's a cost and it's an expense.
So, Marcus, this is exactly it, and it's a business perspective. So I didn't know this. Nobody ever taught me the history of nursing and nursing school. I could not figure out why, you know, things like ratios work in every other setting but never worked for nursing. And there was always an argument that ratios aren't the issue. But you know that the more nurses that you have per patient, the better the outcomes per patient. It's a scientific fact, published in numerous NIH articles to show that one of the greatest indicators of patient death upon admission to a hospital is how many patients a nurse has, right? This is all factual information. So until I got into the business world and learned that nurses are costs to healthcare centers, they were rolled into the room rates back in the 1930s, largely as an effort to diminish the role of women's liberation. In 1920, women got the right to vote. 1920s, nursing became the largest economic vehicle for women's financial independence in the world. They all charged for their services. I don't know if you know this, very similar to physicians. Private families paid for private duty nursing. Hospitals were deplorable places. But as they developed surgeries, private families started to bring in private duty nurses to pay for their services. Hospitals started to see that care got better. They started to employ nurses. What they realized in the 1920s is that on every bill, there is a line for nursing services that were broken out on every single hospital bill. But as that started to happen, men ran hospitals. Physicians were men. They started to get threatened by the women's knowledge of their financial impact to it. So as the expert Donna Deere said, they looked for a model that would capture nursing services, but not necessarily recognize it. So they turned to hotels in the 1930s, looked at the model in which maids were rolled into room rates, and they rolled nursing into room rates, forever hiding the value of nursing in the profession, hence the rise of the term handmaiden for nurses as they supported physicians. And the first nursing shortage and crisis existed in the 1930s when so many women walked away from the profession saying, you have taken away my financial viability. And I believe this model specifically rose to prevent women's economic development. Now, in the last 100 years, and specifically in the last 40, every single other degreed profession has a reimbursement model associated with it. OT, PT, respiratory therapists, physician service, you can bill for your services. Nursing has not. So that's actually why we launched the Commission for Nurse Reimbursement to take on federal models, because we believe, to your point, Marcus, that as long as nurses are cost, you are going to staff them to the lowest cost denominator. They are not an investable resource. And as such, we treat them as a commoditized workforce with no value. And we must change that to stabilize the system that we have in place.
So, Rebecca, that is really fascinating. In medical school and in residency, we're never taught anything about finances. Until I started researching things on my own, I didn't even know what the hospital was billing for certain things. And I'm assuming it's the same for nursing schools, right?
100%. There is no, and in all honesty, there is nothing that for purposes of all things, nurses can't bill for their services. They don't do any such thing. You can't say, hey, you know what? I just gave this medication. I just changed this wound. I'm doing this kind of patient care. There's nothing that actually reimburses nurses for that. They're invisible. But to your point, physicians don't learn about finance or strategy or operations within medical school. Nursing school is even more disparate in terms of talking about those things. Money almost actually feels like this evil term. Business almost feels evil because it is counter to the public mission that we have, which is to alleviate suffering of human beings, right? Like that's why we do what we do, right, Tosh? Like we became this because we saw a better world and we wanted to be part of that. And what nobody told us was that behind the scenes, it was all going to be driven by money and business models. And we need to get much smarter on that. And to your point, medical school and nursing schools have not done our professions a service by handicapping us by not having access to this information. So fundamentally, we must start having those programs teach strategy, finance, and operation. But more importantly, the business model around healthcare so that we as a profession can advocate for our positions, but more importantly, advocate for our patients.
Strategy, finance, and operations. That's usually not language that we hear from nurses. And I'm curious, it almost reminds me a little bit of The Matrix, where at some point, like you started seeing things very differently than your coworkers. What can you share with us about that period when you're practicing as a nurse and you're just not seeing the same things, or maybe you're just butting up against the same walls. What was that transition like for you?
So, Marcus, it was painful. I think for me, what got so frustrating for me as a nurse is I would come to my manager and I'd say, if we did this, I think it would help. You know, if we simply changed X, Y, and Z, I feel this would make a difference. And I remember my leaders looking at me and going, Rebecca, that's really great that you think that way. It's really great you feel that way. But what I quickly learned is they don't care how you think or feel. Without data or numbers or finances, they could care less of what it is. And instead of saying, hey, Rebecca, you know, I really like this idea, what I would hear is, you know, Rebecca, this is great. Can you work Saturday? And so what I realized quickly is I was constantly being put in a box where I was living the definition of insanity, which was doing the same thing over and over again. And I could not change any of it because nobody ever heard me as a nurse. And so I had started a company years ago called HireNurses.com that was simply, I started it because my student nurses were working at Bunker Hill Community College graduating. They couldn't find jobs. My hospice patients who I was caring for as a nurse practitioner couldn't find people to care with them. And I was like, I was terrible about making money. My company was failing. I had tens of thousands of nurses join my platform. I had no idea how to raise money. My mom gave me her nursing retirement to start this company. I was like dying. I was working a full-time job with three little kids under the age of four, running a large nonprofit in addition to it, trying to build this company, and was like, I clearly don't have anything here. Like, maybe I was wrong that if we created a job board that helped people find nurses and nurses find jobs, that we could do something. Until that experience of a hackathon, of a friend who came up to me and said, Rebecca, you have to go to this hackathon and learn about people that start businesses. And that was a life experience that changed my life. Because it put me into a room with decision makers and conversations that no one had ever talked to me about as a nurse.
Tell us about that experience. And this is 2019. Am I getting the year right?
No, actually, it was my first hackathon was in 2015. And that was, yeah. So it's been a long time. And to your point, it still feels new because it was new. And so you guys knew this. Maybe your health systems had them. But for me, my buddy ran Mass Challenge. He said, Rebecca, go to this hackathon. It was being held by a hospital. I went and I showed up there and everyone was there, the CEO of the hospital, the president of the hospital, all the doctors, all of the engineers, all of the scientists. And as I walked around, nobody else in that room was a nurse. And I was like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. This is where the decision makers are, right? Like, I'm not sure, but nobody asked me to leave. I joined a team. And over the course of the weekend, my life changed. And in one key moment in particular, which is I was sitting with our team. We had a physician, we had a scientist, we had an engineer, and the door opened and in walked the CEO of the hospital system. And he sat down right next to me. And he said to our team, what is the problem you're solving? And the physician spoke up and he started talking about the problem and how we were going to solve it. And I'm squirming in my seat. And I was like, well, I finally blurted out, like, that's never going to work. Like, this isn't the problem and this isn't the solution, because you're just going to create more work for the nurses on the floor. And we're just going to do a workaround. And I remember him saying, well, how did I not know that this is how this happened on the floor? Then so did the physician. And I said, well, did you guys ask the nurses? And they both started laughing. And I started laughing because I didn't really know what was funny. And I realized what was funny was the idea that they would have asked the nurses on how to solve any of these problems. But it got out that there was a nurse at this event. And suddenly everybody at this event was seeking me out. Like, Rebecca, is this really a problem? Is this how nurses do it? Is this solving the problem? I'd be like, yes, no, maybe so. And I felt brilliant. Nobody had ever asked me as a nurse. And Tosh, I'm guessing you had a similar kind of experience that really, they never really ask you, right? Like, there's all these directives that come at you, but they're not really asking us. Yeah. They're just telling us.
That's sort of the dynamic that's set up in a healthcare system. And I think having settings like you had, where there is conversations about the operations and the process that's independent of patient care, would lead to those kinds of ideas. Because in a patient care setting, that is what the dynamic is. You're like, we need to have X, Y, and Z done. And then the doctor walks away. And it's not a discussion. We do this at our software company, where we bring designers and developers together. They're both very highly intelligent people with very different perspectives on life and what's happening. But if you put them together in an intentional environment, you get much better outcomes than developers working by themselves or designers working by themselves. So it's the same idea here. The organization, the top down, has to be intentional with how they do it.
That is exactly it. And Marcus, to that point, like, that was when I knew after leaving that event that we had to start having nurses have hackathons. And I thought, if you simply put nurses into rooms with the decision makers, we could really solve those problems. And it wasn't easy getting our first hackathon, but we did it at Northeastern under Dr. Nancy Henrihan. And since that point, it started a now national dialogue on what is the role of nursing. And if you empower nurses with the ability to innovate and start companies, could we really solve major healthcare problems? But part of the problem is that you guys just said, right? Like, nurses aren't taught finance strategy. I didn't know that you could raise funds, and most nurses still are still very female dominated. They're not given access to capital or funding it blows my mind. Like, that's the passion I have in the world, that if we simply could unlock the brilliance of the front line and give them the same resources, the people that speak that language and get all the funding do. If you actually funded nurses, nurses don't innovate because they want to make money. They innovate because they want to save lives. They saw a problem that was so big that patients were dying or that their teammates were drowning. They solved for that problem because inherently in us, they're alleviating the suffering of others. But for some reason, those soft skills that make us so good at what we're doing disqualify us from supposedly being smart enough to actually solve them. And that is the world that I have lived the last. It's just so mind-blowing to me. And the fight is, I can't tell you guys, like, the fight feels exhausting at some times. And I wonder at times myself, like, should I just throw in the towel and go open up my own, like, ice cream shop? Because sometimes I feel like I stand in an abyss trying to fight for this profession. And some days it just feels like the rock is rolling back down the hill on you, right? I don't know how else to say it.
Taj and I have frequent conversations, and it's funny, everyone that we have on the show, we love having them on the show because they're all fighting these seemingly, like, these are big, big challenges, Taj. We see it all the time, right?
Yeah, I agree. And when it comes to organizations, how healthcare is created, it's how someone is promoted, how someone becomes a physician or a nurse and then goes up the corporate ladder. And it's not through experience in leadership. You don't often get leadership training and leadership experience. It's you've been there long enough and you get a new title and then you get moved up. What you described earlier about going to your leader and saying, we could do something differently. The experienced leader would be listening to that. But if you are trained only in healthcare and you don't have leadership experience, team building experience, and you're just simply given a title, you're just dictating, this is what needs to be done to be a cog in the wheel. So I think it goes back to change this fundamental things. You have to train younger physicians, younger nurses on finance operations, but also how to lead people. You know, because leading people takes experience and it's not just giving orders. So I think that is a lot of the challenges healthcare is facing. And how do you change that? And I think it all starts with, like, mentorship and experience and telling residents, students, this is part of your job now. It's not just about taking care of patients.
100%. And I think that the truth is the model, like, specifically, and medical school revolutionized a bit more on the tech side, but nursing school has not. There has not yet been that mind shift or mentality shift within the world of nursing, who governs nursing and all of the regulatory oversight to it, to the advancements of other industries. The same way that you said, like, in tech, right? Hackathons, I mean, that's how Google and IBM, like, jumps leaped all of their competitors, right? Is they did rapid innovation to move things forward. The idea of a hackathon in nursing is still largely considered to be a fad or dangerous or threatening, or God forbid a nurse would actually start a business because that is so counter to, the fundamental principles that, you know, you're supposed to be selfless and angelic. And who cares if you can't put food on the table for your family? Keep showing up at work and, you know, go into those settings that there's no PPE or treatments for the diseases you're seeing, and sacrifice yourself for the goodwill of the others, right? I fundamentally feel that nursing is the greatest American dream, and I hope that we help and elevate women specifically around the world, who nursing will break them out of poverty and change the future of their nations because they'll be sending money back. But to me, fundamentally, what will become the core of our fabric of America if not our neighbors are not nurses, if women and men are not choosing nursing? Who are they going to be And who's going to take care of society? Because it is often the nurses and the teachers who step in to care for society in ways that most other people don't.
So you founded Sonseal, the Society of Nurse Scientists, Innovators, Entrepreneurs, and Leaders. And the more we talk, it feels like to me that it's your dream, your vision for what nurses can be, that they can be empowered, that they can introduce all these solutions. Is that how you would describe Sonseal? That Sonseal is about bringing like-minded nurses together and taking what they know from the clinic, but also saying, okay, now here's how you apply all these best practices. Wait, what are you trying to accomplish with Sonseal?
Sonseal, to your point, exactly. And I'm now president emeritus of the organization. To your point, Marcus, and it was the idea that we're giving nurses the skill sets to have those conversations as the most trusted profession to actually start influencing, having a seat at the table where they have historically been absent. So for Sonseal, the reason I started it and founded it with all of these nurses, we had 800 nursing associations in the country. Why did we need one more nursing one? It's because we needed to redefine what our profession looked like. It was something that we limited ourselves by, and largely we were those people who had walked past differently than the traditional projection were largely considered pariahs. Though I know so many incredible nurses who dropped the RN from their title as they rose in business or as they started their own companies because they found the actual title of nurse hurt them as opposed to advance them. I was speaking with one of the heads of Medicare, Medicaid in another country, and she goes, I put in a job. They found out I was a nurse. And they said, well, the salary range was here, but because you're just a nurse, we're going to drop your salary range to here. These are the things that nursing is highly, I mean, we're a capitated payment model. You guys know this because we're cost to healthcare systems. There is significant international collusion around what nurses should make, not based. The only time we saw market disruption of where nurses were actually paid, what market value actually drove, was during the pandemic when the government finally funded what nurses should be paid during that time. But all of that has rolled back. And the truth is if I'm looking at, I hate to say this, but money ties to value. If people aren't willing to pay for something, there is no value. It's an inherent business one. And there is no way to pay for nursing in this country besides this obsolete one. And the only thing that I can think of is if we don't start teaching nurses about money and finance and keeping them so excluded. And let's be honest, this is happening to the physician workforce as well, Tosh. Like the rolling of physicians into hospital practices is completely eliminating their financial prowess as a sense of what's going on, right? There are tons of people making money. Millions of people making money off of the work of nurses and physicians. It's not us, though, right? There are a whole bunch of private equity groups. There's a whole bunch of administrators. There's a whole bunch of payers who have salaries in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars a year, who make that money off of this profession, who is not financially compensated for what they're delivering. I mean, I know that's the way of capitalism. It happens to always the front line. But to me, none of these people can make money without our licenses. So it's time we take back control and understanding of that incredibly important one. And nursing schools and medical schools owe their graduates. They owe them the responsibility to teach them all the things they haven't, because now they're burning out all of us. And if healthcare goes down in this world, and you're seeing it, right? Emergency room wait times are 19 to 22 hours right now. People can't get in. People are dying from lack of access to the care. I would argue at more than any other developed country in the world, even socialized medicine outside of Canada, we'll say for the moment, is doing better than our for-profit healthcare systems in the country. So it's fundamentally, you guys, I think that's it's a whole nother debate. And I know we want to talk about nursing schools and medical schools and education. But what you guys are doing is sitting on the cusp of trying to transform an antiquated system into a new model that can prepare education that is relevant to each independent learner, still meeting the needs of the testing, but perhaps more tailoring education in a way that is going to make this workforce more effective as a profession, because we are not effective as a profession. Go talk to the bankers. Those guys are highly effective, right? It's time that we start becoming effective from the perspective of controlling the business in which we operate.
You're talking about some really large systemic challenges that in many ways we can't hackathon away. But by the same token, you do have these hackathons. And one of the things that I think a lot of people always appreciate about hackathons, in a short period of time, you see some results. So how do you as an organization sort of balance, okay, here's these big things we're going to work on, but you know what? Let's get in the room for 2 days and let's change something tomorrow. How do you balance those two?
So I think Sansale has done that very well. And I think why, you know, I'm president emeritus and why I went and started another nonprofit, the Commission for Nurse Reimbursement, was you recognize organizations, especially nonprofits, are going to reach a level of efficiency of what they do and do well. So Sansale's idea is that early stage, right? We're going to introduce innovation to healthcare systems and systems and academics to change the narrative around how nurses should be viewed and how they can think about their opportunities. Marcus, in all honesty, the Commission for Nurse Reimbursement, what I've come to realize in working a lot in policy and with politicians and, you know, nothing changes quickly. So the commission work is a 5 to 10 year fight. This will be the fight of my career. I had to sit down and commit myself to saying that the next 5 years to fight for changing the reimbursement model or getting it into the national level of conversation, as opposed to, hey, I can't tell you, I was talking to the health committee the other week and they kept saying, well, you know what? We're just going to give more money to nursing schools. And I was like, this is not the problem. The problem is not how many nurses we're producing. You have a leaky bucket. They leave 60% of them are going to be gone in 2 years. We have a systemic problem. And the problem is that they're not investable. So this was getting that attention and that awareness to, and most, I'll be very honest, most politicians have no idea that nurses were cost to healthcare systems, right? So anything worth doing is going to take a huge amount of time to do it. And so there's things that you do daily, like podcasts, like we're having a conversation on, that make you feel like you're perhaps changing some of the dialogue. But I guess the advice I would give to anybody listening is that most of the time, you're going to feel as though perhaps the needle isn't moving. But I've come to realize the older I've gotten is that it's not that it's not moving. It's just that it's going to take longer than you would expect. And that's okay, because if it's worth changing, then that's what you've committed to.
What you're saying is very true for young professionals, not just in healthcare. There is a generational difference in what is the expectation for work. When it comes to new graduates, a lot of times they're grown up in an Amazon and an iPhone generation where everything is available instantly. So when they come to the job environment, they're hoping that they're successful and established quickly. But it takes time to build up your experience and get to a level of satisfaction in your job. So I wonder if you're seeing that in that, you know, you said both in medicine and nursing, people are leaving after 2 years. Do you see an element of that, you know, being a generational thing, or do you think it's more of a institutional, there has been a change that has happened that's triggering this?
And so I think it's interesting. And for about the last decade, we've seen this level of nurses churning and churning. And I think that you would argue actually even in the last 20 years that they were okay with that because there wasn't a lot of options. In the 1980s, right, there weren't a ton of options for women to do. I always kept thinking back to myself. I looked generationally, like what could my grandmother's generation accomplish as a woman? What could my mother's generation accomplish as a woman? What can we accomplish as a woman? And realize that it's not, I mean, this generation is the first real generation where women are coming out with much more equality and opportunities than they've historically been given access to. So women maybe before had the chance of becoming like a nurse, a teacher, a secretary, or a stewardess, right? But largely all the way even to the 2000s, very few broke into the business world. We've had examples, but by far and few between. That world's changing now. I do think some of it's generational, but I also think this next generation, especially women, are going to say, no, I'm not, don't put me into this hierarchical capitated payment model that you define what success looks like for me and then handicap me from being able to drive any of the changes that would keep me here, right? Nursing is still a very relegated position that you don't have a voice to change those systems that drive you crazy. But I also think the reality is that the profession of nursing is still considered a very noble profession. I think, though, even being noble, the generation that has come, or that is growing up now, right? The development of social media, and to your point, the quickness, rapidness, they believe that success happens overnight. And the truth is, on social media, you can make it look that way. Right? You can make it look like you're rolling in the dough, you're having all this success, you have tons of followers, and you could be really eating out of ramen noodle at home and barely making your rent, right? Like the reality is perception is mixing this world of reality. And so I think one of these conversations, Ash and Marcus, and I think we're going to see this happen because there was a lot of free money going around the last few years, and there's a major clampdown, is what this next generation will define from those that have the money and the power and what they're willing to sacrifice and the length of time in which they're willing to work in such environments to make those sacrifices. And I think it's going to be vastly different, in all honesty, than what we grew up knowing, and then specifically what our parents grew up being able to do.
What can you tell us about Sanseal on the website? I think it's great. You welcome institutional partners, nurses, and also nursing students. And I'm curious, as an organization, do you have a lot of membership among nursing students? What would you like to see? Is this one of those things that until nurses are working and see the problems that might be appropriate for them, then they come over to Sanseal? What can you tell us about your current efforts with nursing students or where you'd like to be?
Now, nursing students by far are the most ingenious group of individuals that we work with, right? They haven't been, and you know this, you guys, right? They haven't been jaded by the system yet, right? They see the problems clearly and they think, hey, I can solve these, right? So we would like as many nursing students to get involved in this, because the truth is one thing that, and you guys know this, you're dealing with students all the time. They're completely empowered in ways that we've never been. They understand that they're paying an institution for their education and they're demanding those institutions to deliver on things that we never did, right? And so what I love about, and please, anybody who would like to join sanseal.org, please go to that website, is that it connects you with the world. And to your, Tosh said this earlier, right? When you get into healthcare, there isn't really a leadership development, and who you know is absolutely critical. So what I loved about Sanseal is when we founded it, I said, I could care less about your degree level. I could care less about where you work or what your title is. If you are somebody who wants to make the world better and you want to change the world, we want you involved. Because what we've all come to realize in life, right? Like, it doesn't all, let's be honest, it does matter to a degree. But the thing that's really going to get you through life, that's a life skill, is the amount of grit and determination that you have. And that's unfortunately something we can't teach. It's something you have to live. And the one thing about hackathons and innovation is it allows you to live things that you're never going to experience in your work. And that's the power of networks and organizations like Sanseal, is if done that way, they don't have the hierarchical structure that's about who's the most famous in this group and how do you get through a step ladder, and 20 years from now, you can be president. Maybe not. Maybe we are in that situation where you are president tomorrow, right? Like, that's the idea.
Do you have membership currently among nursing schools? Is that something that you pursue? Is that something that you'd like to see more of?
So nursing schools in general, similar to hospitals, right, don't often fund nursing students association memberships or fund nursing school associations at large. The only one that they do is the National Student Nurses Association. You guys may want to check out NASNA. But unfortunately, it is not something that is usually talked about at the undergraduate level until the time you go into graduate school. I'm not sure if it's the same in medical school.
No, I don't think so either. Is not a medical school. They don't fund anything.
You've done such a great job on sharing with us the history of the organization, your first hackathon. Let's go up to present times, because I see there's one coming up on April 8th, I believe. I've participated in a lot of software hackathons, but I've never been in a nurse hackathon. Set the stage for us. Who's going to be there? What's the format of the event? Just tell us what to expect on April 8th.
Yeah, so Marcus, this is through a partnership with the American Organization of Nursing Leaders. AONL is the largest nursing association. It is a division of the American Hospital Association. And they run a very large conference every year. And this is going to be a full day pre-conference session that basically brings into a mini hackathon. So what you're going to have is those attendees who register early are going to go through the design thinking process, and in a sense, a mini hackathon to experiment with innovation, because most of them have never had that chance. And so what we fundamentally believe, right, is all you have to do is attend one, then do one, and then you can teach one, because this is not something complicated. It is a process by eliminating the barriers of our thinking to innovate about the problems that you want to solve and come up with solutions that you feel could actually solve the problems you need solving, as opposed to what happens a lot in healthcare is paying a lot of whole bunch of expensive consultants to come in and tell you how you to solve your problems, but then they leave and unfortunately never really did solve the problem that they were having.
A related question, you already mentioned that this is taking place at the AONL Inspiring Leadership Conference in New Orleans, but I also see Microsoft's attached to this, Johnson & Johnson is attached to this. One of the things I'm just really impressed with is it seems to me that you from the jump have said, no, this is not going to be something that Sanseal solves on its own. Can you just talk about the collaboration with all your partners?
I've come to realize early in life, you can do very little on your own. And for us, how this happened actually with Microsoft and J&J was when the pandemic hit, Sanciel started to do weekly meetups of nurses. And as early as our first meetup, I think, took place in March 2020, nurses were calling in as they were going onto their shift, as they were on their shift, as they were leaving their shifts, as they were heading into their shifts. And what they were saying is, oh my God, there is nobody here. Everybody has left us at the hospitals. There's no administrators. There's a handful of doctors. The only people who were in hospitals at the start of the pandemic, nobody realizes this, were nurses left. Everybody else stayed and worked from home. So what we started to realize is nurses were innovating on the front lines, because the truth is they would say, I remember this one nurse calling in and she goes, you're going to take a pulse ox on a person who just walked in the ER. They're going to be laughing and talking to you. You're going to realize they're at 70% O2 sat, and you're going to be intubating that person. And in the course of an hour, you are the patient. I remember nurses saying, hey, you know what? High Fowler's is not working. Go ahead and flip the patient onto their stomach. We're finding that they're doing better. I remember these nurses innovating when there was no masks, calling in and saying, hey guys, we're taking the foot booties and re-sewing them into the masks to work for our situation, right? So I got on the phone call in April of 2020 and I called the head of J&J Nursing, Linda Benton at the time. And I said, Linda, we need to do a hackathon. I said, these nurses are innovating. Nobody is there. And then I called Molly McCarthy, who at the time was heading up the former chief nursing officer of Microsoft. And I said, would you do this? And by May 2020, Marcus, May 2020, we hosted our first hackathon. And then we went on to host four more virtual hackathons throughout the pandemic because nurses were innovating on the front lines, doing things that we had never experienced. And what happened for me in that moment was I realized that actually in the world, good things can be done quickly when there is enough reason for people to align. And that is some of the best that came out of the pandemic, was for the first time in a very long time, we had organizations and the world rowing in the same direction to try to beat a bigger threat to human existence than we had seen in 100 years.
Very well said. Rebecca, you've shared with us that the people who are interested in Sanciel can get information at sanciel.org. We certainly encourage our listeners and viewers to do that. How about nursing reimbursement? How can they learn more about that?
Thank you, Marcus. The Commission for Nursereimbursement.org. Please go to that website and sign up. We have over 1,300 volunteers. And let me tell you, in my years of building things and starting movements and things like this, the amount of movement on the national stage we're having around this conversation has actually shocked me. So if you're excited about policy and things along those lines, we'd love to get you involved there. But if you're excited about innovation and hackathons, please join Sanciel. Thank you so much, Marcus, for having me. And I'm just so flattered about the information and all the hard work you did to get this together. So thank you.
Rebecca, it's been fun and super, super enlightening. I think I speak for all of us when I say that without nurses, healthcare, as we know, it simply does not work. Ask a friend about a recent hospital stay. It's likely one of the very first responses they'll tell you about will be the quality and compassion afforded to them by those frontline nurses. People like Rebecca Lugg, they're doing their part to ensure that nurses are not just seen as a line item to be minimized, but as a critical linchpin that maximizes both patient outcomes and experience. We invite you to learn more about the Society of Nurse Scientists, Innovators, Entrepreneurs, and Leaders at sanciel.org. You've been enjoying MedEd, which is produced by Metrics Lab. Metrics, practice medicine, not software. Learn more at metricslab.com. For Santosh Cherian and everyone else on the MedEd team, I'm Marcus Grimm.